Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. America, and all the chips in the PC. It is Saturday, the 8th of September, Anno Domini 2018, and you... Oh, you lucky people. You're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 5 minutes after the hour, we are going to be bringing you news, views, things to choose, nothing to lose. Kick off your shoes. Don't get the blues. Here comes some news. We'll start with Microsoft.
Dun, dun,
dun. Windows 7 might be on its way to being Microsoft's new Windows XP. As Microsoft urges consumers and businesses to upgrade to Windows 10, many customers are happily staying on Windows 7, despite the rapidly approaching end of even limited support. Microsoft's VP for Office and Windows Marketing, Jared Spataro, has offered a helping hand to some Windows 7 holdouts. He confirms that enterprise customers will be able to continue to pay for extended support on Windows 7. Currently, most Windows 7 users will stop getting any updates, even paid ones, on January 14, 2020. The operating system launched in 2009, so the OS will be more than a decade old at that point. Microsoft is probably anxious to avoid another Windows XP situation where there are so many users of the ancient OS that Microsoft had no choice but to extend support several times.
And still using it.
And people are still using it. It wasn't able to drop support for XP until April of 2014, when the operating system was almost 13 years old. Microsoft customers with sufficiently deep pockets will be able to get Windows 7 support. Windows Enterprise customers with sufficiently deep pockets will be able to get Windows 7 support after the cutoff, according to Spataro. The extended security updates program will allow those running Windows 7 Professional or Windows 7 Enterprise under volume licensing to pay for continued access to patches. There won't be new features, of course, but there haven't been new features in 5 years. But Windows 7 systems in the program won't become prime targets for malware. Of course, Microsoft frames this as a way to help businesses keep the lights on as they move their systems to Windows 10. The ESU program, the Extended Security Updates program, will be available for up to 3 years after the end of public support. It will be a per-device cost, so businesses with lots of Windows 7 machines will pay out the nose for continued support. That also incentivizes them to migrate to Windows 10 over time. In the case of XP, Microsoft also offered customer support contracts for businesses and governments that just couldn't move off the aged operating system. It's unclear if Windows 7 has become so deeply embedded that Microsoft will have to offer a similar service. To tempt enterprises to keep moving to Windows 10, Spataro's post also clarified how the rapid pace of Windows 10 updates could be controlled. Microsoft pledges that the current set of feature updates, version 1607, 1703, 1709, and 1803, will get 30 months of support from their original release date. 30 months. Future updates to Windows 10 Enterprise will also have 30 months of support, but that drops to 18 months next March. This should allow IT departments to test and deploy updates on their schedule. The company still plans 2 major updates per year. So if you are a Windows 7 user, you will continue to get some security updates, but that's it. So really no change for you. Only if you're spending a bucket load of cash to Microsoft will you get any extended support at all. So our poll of the week at soundbites.org. That is Bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you, is Microsoft extends extended support for Windows 7. And your choices are, you mean I'm not actually getting support as a home user? And people still use Windows 7? And people still use Windows? So far, we've got about 24 votes, and people still use Windows is number one by a wide margin. But I know you'll have more to say, so if you scroll down on the right under fascinating stuff, you'll see the forums, And the second set of forums down is the poll discussion. And so far, at least, the first item under the poll discussion is 8 September 18, Microsoft extended support for Windows 7. So far, we've got a couple of people and four things that have been said. So you can head over there. And also, if you want to see Microsoft's actual support table, what is supported when for how long, and well, no, that's a different table. This is what each of those things means, what mainstream support means, what extended support means. You can go to that support table and you'll see what that all means. It means less than you think it does. Spoiler alert. It means less than you think it does.
But you should not be surprised.
Right.
It's Microsoft.
Exactly.
Hello.
But then you can give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299. Toll free, 1-800-790-0415.
But you know what else?
What? That's right. We had a birthday.
No, and you've got one coming up.
That's exactly right.
This Monday.
Monday is my birthday.
And how young do you turn?
I will be 68 years old. I was saying that to somebody just the other day. They said, "Wow, you're old." I said, "I'm supposed to be dead by when I was 10." So the last 58 years have been a miracle. I'm perfectly happy being 68 years old, and I'm proud of it. Took me 68 years to get here, and I fought for every day of it.
Well, that's what's weird also. Folks don't realize all three of us are Virgos.
That's right. We're all September babies.
Yeah.
It's a very cold winter.
Very cold winter.
Yeah, because you're the 10th. Steve is the 19th.
A lot of New Year's celebrations going on.
Or, no, you're the 8th?
September
19th. Yeah, 19th. I'm the 20th.
Yep. So we're and of course the show just turned 29 years old on the 3rd. So we're all September babies.
But I can tap you two though as far as your first birthday gift.
Yeah.
Guess what I got stuck with?
Uh-oh. What?
Baby sister.
Oh my goodness.
My sister and I are born on the same day, a year, and literally 3 minutes apart.
Well, now, normally I would say, what are the odds? But you're still, like, what, 143 kids in your family? So the odds are pretty low, actually.
The odds are 1 in 365.
Yeah, no, my dad's 1 in 19.
How many times did they think you were twins?
Yeah.
You've got the same birthday.
Yeah, right. Right. It's my sister's birthday, too. You don't look that much alike. We're not. We're just...
Yeah, we're related.
Yeah, we're just related. That's all it is. My cousin just had a birthday, and he's a twin. And I'd kind of forgotten that. They all live, most of them live in Florida now. So I said happy birthday to him on Facebook, and then I thought, wait a minute. It's his sister's birthday, too. I should probably say that to her, too.
Yeah.
I read a story about a guy had died, and his 10-year younger brother looked just the spitting image of him. And at the funeral, the brother was walking into the funeral, and one of the old aunts said, "Oh my goodness, what are you doing?" "So I'm coming to the funeral." "You're supposed to be in the box. It's a miracle. It's a miracle."
It happened to my aunt. Her husband had an identical twin brother, and we hadn't seen him in 30 years.
Whoa.
And he walked in, and luckily I saw him out in the hall and realized what was happening and reminded some people.
Now, he could have scared the heck out of everyone, but you hit another coffin and during the service have the lid open up and have him to the right. Just it's right when the pastor gets to the, he's risen to a better place.
And right, right. Yeah, no, I came back, sucked. I'm just going to hang out here more for a while.
Yeah, sorry, I went down. I thought I was going up, so I came back.
I got a second chance at this, and I'm going to get it right this time. Yes, we all have birthdays, and we're very excited. And to all of you who have September birthdays, we wish you a most happy birthday and many, many more. But, yeah. So Microsoft, speaking of old, Windows 7 is now ancient.
In computer terms.
Computer terms, it's ridiculously ancient.
But it still works the best.
Right. Well, it still works.
Yeah. It still works great.
Tuck and I started to make the analogy to like dog years. It's 7 dog years to a human year.
Right.
Computer years, you're looking at about 20 or 30 computer years to a human year.
That's exactly right. And the thing we have to remember is that Windows 7 was great for its day, but its day is long gone. We do many things differently now. We have hardware that never existed when Windows 7 came around, and nobody's writing drivers for Windows 7 anymore.
No.
Nobody. So if you were to buy a new machine and try to put Windows 7 on it, the likelihood that it would work is not as high as it used to be.
Yeah, before it could find other hardware, auto detect it, and have, you know, get it working seamlessly.
Right, get some. But most now, had a legacy mode that they, you could put it into.
Go into. Steve, but nowadays, with all the newer, like you said, DVRs and everything else, back then, CDs were the big thing. Now the DVRs are different. The video cards, the processors, everything else.
USB 3.
It's just not designed for it.
Right.
Steve Gibson finally upgraded to Windows 7.
Windows 7?
Because his XP machine died.
Yeah.
Complete, dead, total. But he had all his data backed up. So he was running 3 gigs of RAM because that's all Windows XP could do. So he bought a Windows 7 machine, a capable motherboard back when there was rumors that Microsoft was going to stop supporting Windows 7 on like Skylake or something. So he had this quad i7 processor with 128 gigs of RAM. He got a little annoyed because he couldn't get all 128 at once at the higher clock speed.
Right.
He had to lower the clock speed or he'd only get 64 gigs of RAM. So everything is just so screamingly fast, but he's not used to 32-bit apps. So his entire, you know, he was using Masm and he used a DOS text editor to write his assembly code. And so none of his 8-bit code works anymore. So he said, wow, it's fast, but I got to relearn everything.
Yep.
And the other thing, though, folks have to be aware of, I mean, you know, granted the Windows 7 machines are working, you know, but again, if you're on the web and that, there's going to be a constant due diligence to keep that machine clean because you are wide open for attack and Microsoft could care less. They're not going to help you anymore. Their advice is always going to be then move up to the next and latest operating system.
I keep getting this window that Microsoft wants to help me with my virus.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Well, and we get, I'm sure you guys get it too. People send me stuff all the time and say, I'm having problems with my Windows 7 machine. My first thought is, yes, you are.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you're going to continue.
Can help you.
And you can bring it into me. I'm going to clean it. I can get it cleaned up. That's no problem. But I cannot guarantee once you take it home, and I tell them this right off the bat, once you get it home and get it back on the internet, all bets are off.
Yep.
You are then susceptible to more spyware and malware depending on where you're going.
Right.
And especially if you go home and take it and the child gets back on there, one of your kids, and they go up there and they're downloading pirated movies or this or that. Sorry, I can't help it. They're loaded with a lot of spyware and malware that is going to, you know, just muck up your machine.
Yep. I was talking to somebody the other day. He still had, one of my students, had a Windows 7 machine. And in the class that I'm teaching, the students have to buy a Raspberry Pi. It's $83, I think, whatever it is. To get, and it's all kinds of additional stuff, lots of LEDs and resistors and a breadboard and everything else. So it's you know, it's a good deal. But he was saying, I put my Raspberry Pi, Raspberry Pi 3 together, and it's faster than my Windows 7 machine. And it only cost $83. Yes, that's exactly right. Yes. All right, we're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It's 19 minutes after the hour. It's Soundbites. It's member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Computer. computer talk you can understand. More Sound Bites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Wright.
And at 24 minutes after the hour, we are Sound Bites. this is both bad and good news, really. Apple just removed its number one paid utility in the Mac App Store, Adware Doctor, after it was found to be secretly recording users' app data and browser history and sending them back to a server located in China. Apple was notified a month ago by a security researcher, but it only removed the app on Friday. From looks alone, the app appeared legit, with plenty of five-star ratings and approval from Apple. It was listed alongside vetted apps like Final Cut Pro and Logic Pro X, or 10, or who knows.
Yeah.
Adware Doctor was supposed to scan Mac computers for malware and remove suspicious files. It originally pretended to be a duplicate of Malwarebytes Adware Medic app, and Apple removed it from the App Store until it changed its name from Adware Medic to Adware Doctor in order to bypass the exact name copy issue. Adware Doctor disguises its universal access request as a malware scan in order to access data from other apps and running processes. It likely is able to bypass sandboxing and access processes by copying Apple's own code found in its technical Q&A for retrieving a list of all processes. By these means, it can read all your browser history and remember apps you've downloaded. The server in China is now offline, but it can, of course, still be turned back on. If you've been running Adware Doctor, make sure it's gone from your system. So have you been running Adware Doctor? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Or toll-free 1-800-790-0415.
In fact, it's interesting. They probably had in their terms is that we're going to scan all your apps to make sure they're not spyware.
And you agreed to
and
that.
And you agreed to that. And so that's what they did. So
right.
So right. Not quite malicious, but crappy.
Well, but yes, malicious, because what it was doing was taking all the data from all the apps.
And then passing it back to another server.
Passing it back to China.
Yep.
And that's, you know, look, the reality is, and we've talked about this many, many times, I don't care how much you trust Apple or you trust Microsoft or whatever you like. You may think they're the greatest company in the face of the earth, the coolest thing since laser sliced bread. The minute you add a third-party application, all bets are off. Done. And so you have to be more careful and more aware. I'm running a Mac and I can't get viruses. Really? Are you running anything that wasn't written by Apple? Oh, well, yeah. Okay. There you are.
And there was even once a malicious iWork installer, Apple's Office suite.
Right.
Someone had packaged the iWork installer with a virus and put it back on the internet. So if you happen to download this iWork installer, not from Apple, so why wouldn't you have just gone to Apple to get it?
Well, it's free there, too.
Yeah. So you can get infected. Well-known apps, there have been a problem with a couple of well-known Mac utilities where they're... the company server was compromised and a malicious version of the app was distributed for a while. It can still happen.
It can happen pretty much everywhere.
Yep. And in fact, the fake virus and fake cleaning programs now outnumber the legitimate ones vastly.
Right.
In fact, you can't tell what's real and fake anymore unless you have to know ahead of time this one's real and all the other ones are fake.
Right. And people even do that on Linux. You know, you have your repository for your distribution. But people, I have to run Opera. Or, Opera's in. But you know what I mean. You have to run some program that's, Second Life viewers.
Yeah.
Who knows what's in those?
Mm-hmm.
Right? Who knows what sort of things are going on there? It's a very dicey situation. And... even with the best intended, best running antivirus programs, stuff can get through, as happened with Apple. It's supposed to look at other apps. That's its job. So, okay, go ahead and look at other apps. That's what you expect it to be doing.
What does it do when it's done with that? Is the,
right. Yeah. Right. And so that's an interesting issue. You know, we all want stuff that is...
And Edware was $5. You had to pay for it.
Right.
There's legitimate ones that are free.
Right. Right. Well, $5, if I'm paying for it, it must be better. And, of course, that's an issue that a lot of people have in general, you know. I was in a big discussion with some people the other day about some software that they absolutely had to use Fusion 360. They're not a student. They couldn't get a free license. So they were very upset that they would have to pay for it. I said, Blender.
Mm-hmm.
Blender is free. Well, I don't know Blender. Oh, how well do you know Fusion 360? Well, I don't. Okay. Then where's the problem? Well, nobody uses Blender. No, about 1 billion people use Blender.
Because it's free.
Give it a try. It's free.
Yeah.
And he didn't. Later on, he said, I'm so glad I found that. Yeah, you did, yeah. Yeah. Congratulations.
There was, I read an interview with a developer once who, he had a program priced at $20, and it sold fairly well, and then sales died off, and he started getting complaints that $20 was too high. So he dropped it to $15, and then it had a spike in sales and then died off again, and he got complaints that it was too high. So he dropped it to 20 or to 10, and there was a spike in sales, and then he got complaints it was too high. So no matter what your price is, someone will complain it's too high.
Right. Right. How much are you willing to pay for software? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299, toll-free 1-800-790-0415. Many people don't... I don't pay for software anymore. I run Linux.
You don't need to pay for software.
Well, exactly. I legitimately don't pay for software
anymore.
There's
a difference.
Yeah, there is. Because I run Linux or my Chromebook on everything, and all the software is free. So, and that's why I know about Blender. You know, other people are saying, well, I got to use Fusion, which is hundreds of dollars or thousands of dollars, depending on which version you get. Blender does all the same stuff, and it does it for free. It's not exactly the same. You have to learn new features. But to save yourself thousands of dollars, you're not willing to learn a different way of doing things? Okay. Yep. Okay. It's your money.
We have that discussion with a lot of our older customers about cutting the cord, and they hate the cable company, and so then you've got to learn how to switch your HDMI connections.
Right.
So they didn't know there was a source button on their TV, so you can switch between the antenna, an Apple TV box to get internet television, and then your DVR. Oh, a DVD player. Oh, I can use the DVD player again. You always could if you hit source 3.
Right.
but it's a different way of thinking. You can't say, I want to watch this show, which is on Tuesdays at 10.
Right.
You say, I go to the network app and I look up the show name and then I watch it.
Right.
So it's a different conceptual way of thinking, and some people have trouble doing that. And so the cable is easiest for watching television.
Right.
It's often a lot cheaper to do it otherwise.
Particularly people my age. We all remember must-see TV.
Mm-hmm.
Thursday nights, you sat down in front of the television.
Yep.
Because I think it was CBS had must-see TV. All the great shows were on that night. So you planned your Thursday nights.
Yeah.
You know? Because otherwise, you're standing around the water cooler on Friday.
NBC.
What?
NBC.
Oh, it was NBC. Okay. Well, shows how much attention I paid.
Yeah.
But... You were standing around the water cooler on Friday, and everybody else was talking about the show you didn't see.
Yeah. So we've learned to shift that because DVR, you know, VHS before, and then DVRs have now become so common.
Right.
People now preface their conversation, did you see the episode X? Because you can't say last night's episode. Because sometimes...
And because now so much of the stuff is on Hulu or it's on Amazon... Or it's on
and you
Netflix.
Get all 20 episodes at once.
And right, you can binge watch an entire thing. And now, of course, we have the really the serious phenomenon of couples who watch together and then one of them gets ahead. And and there have been serious arguments.
You watched it without me?
Yeah.
I told you I was going to watch it and you said you'd be right in.
Right. Right.
Well, you shouldn't have started it.
Well, you said you'd be right in.
Right.
But now on the other hand, I haven't watched TV in 2 weeks. I haven't literally seen nothing except Forged in Fire. Because I just happened to be sitting in front of the TV and thought, oh, it's almost 9 o'clock.
No, my wife will ask me
that. Watch it. What the heck?
My wife will ask me that now and then. What are you watching? I don't know. Whatever the channel was on when the DVR stopped.
Yeah, right. Yes, yes.
And there's some really crazy things that sometimes the DVR, after the DVR finishes and it goes back to whatever channel it was.
Well, that's another thing Sling is offering now. Mm-hmm. For $5 a month that you can use their cloud DVR system, you know, and record any of the shows.
Who's this?
Sling.
Sling TV,
Sling,
yeah.
Sling.
A lot of places, and that's another concept change. Rather than a DVR that you record your show on, everything becomes on demand.
Right.
So a lot of the streaming services are still calling it a DVR, but they probably just have one copy that they just feed to anyone who wants it.
Well, Google says they're keeping you. You can watch every show you like for 6 months.
Yep.
You can keep it for 6 months. Well, you don't keep it. They're just keeping, and it's cloud DVR, whether it's Sling or whatever, you know. They're keeping a copy around for 6 months.
Mm-hmm.
It's Google. It's not like they're even going to notice that storage is missing.
Yeah. There was a company a few years ago that was trying to do streaming video, and they were trying to do things illegally. They bought 100 DVD players, and when you wanted to stream a movie, somebody put a disc in a drive.
Wow.
Figuring that would be legal. The motion picture TV industry sued them out of existence and decided that wasn't legal. They called it rebroadcasting without a license.
Right.
But I'm not broadcast. Well, it's on the internet, so it's a broadcast.
Yeah, it's
really
broadcasting, yeah.
Netcasting. We got a new word.
Yeah, new word, right.
Yeah.
But now it's a little bit different because if you have the, if it's just a DVR, you're paying for the service,
mm-hmm.
and now you're just time shifting.
Right.
Which is different from a DVD that theoretically you're supposed to buy.
Right.
Right. But yeah, so yeah, and Google TV is what, $40 a month and has unlimited DVR for 6 months, and Sling has DVR and they've all got it now.
Yeah.
Or they all will have it if they don't right now. But I've talked about this before. I love the fact that my entertainment and my internet come from two different companies.
Mm-hmm.
So that if one of them goes out, I still have the, unless it's obviously, unless it's a blackout in the neighborhood, that's a different story. But other than that, I always have one or the other available. And of course, my internet is so fast that I stream movies. I will say this, we have a guest, my daughter's college buddy. She just got a job here in town, and she's staying with us while she finds an apartment. And the first night she was here, we, you know, said, here's the password to the guest access to the network and yada, yada, yada. And she went to a room. She said, I'm going to watch some Netflix. She went in a room. She came back out and she says, what just happened? I said, what? She said, I started my movie and the little circle goes around. It said 1%, 2%, 80% and the movie started. What happened? I said, I've got fiber. I'm on green light. It's fast. It's very fast. She couldn't believe it because, you know, normally you start a movie and you get the little thing runs for a while. And
because like we've said, our poor country.
Yeah.
It's sad to say people are amazed by that. Whereas if you were to go overseas to some third world country, they'd sit there and laugh at us. That we're paying this for such slow speeds.
We're hampered by our legacy.
Yeah.
Right, right, right.
And yet the companies that are operating over there, are still making money.
They're making a lot of money.
Yeah.
Now, it's a very
sad state.
It's a very different mindset. Here, it's not about how much money you make. It's about how much more money you made than last week. And that's a very different
shareholders.
That's what was in the news last week. Some of the, in fact, most of the top stores in Rochester are closing because they weren't making enough money. They were all making money. They weren't making enough money.
Right. Right. And that's the way it works. And so
look at even Sears.
Yeah.
Sears is closing all their stores.
I just read an article on that. The Kenmore brand used to be, you know, the top appliance brand.
Yeah, it was the Cadillac.
Other companies were selling devices under the Kenmore brand because they wanted that brand recognition.
Right.
So now the Kenmore brand is actually worth more than Sears.
Yep.
But because of other brands started coming in selling their under their own name, the Kenmore brand has kind of lost a lot of its reputation lately. And so what these brands we traditionally grew up with are now faltering, and the last couple generations of kids don't really have any brand loyalty. So it's you right. never go back and buy the same brand again. You just buy whatever you want.
Right.
Yeah, whatever has the best sale this week.
Exactly right. We're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple minutes, Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Nick Francesco, you, 39 minutes after the hour, Soundbites, member-supported, Jazz 90.1.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Benray.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 44 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. And you can call us at 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free, 1-800-790-0415. The very first version, speaking of birthdays in September, the very first version of Google Chrome was released September 2, 2008, which means the world's most popular browser is now 10 years old. And it's actually kind of reached a supermajority. It's the number one browser in the world. Google is celebrating.
But that also counts Android installs.
Right.
Yep.
Google is celebrating Chrome's first decade with the stable release of a major new revamp of its UI or user interface. Chrome's big redesign is rolling out across desktop operating systems, Android, and iOS. The new design brings Chrome more in line with Google's updated material design guidelines. You'll find a UI that is rounder, whiter, and has new icons. Tabs changed from trapezoidal shape to rectangles with rounded corners. The address bar is round. The Omnibox is an actual box now. And there's a new profile button to the right, of the menu. Since we last looked in on Chrome's redesign, the new tab page was revamped. The speed dial thumbnails are replaced with fav icons on a circular background and a menu in the bottom right that will let you change the new tab background. You can also arbitrarily add URL shortcuts to the new tab page. Finally, Chrome isn't just getting a new design. There are also a few new features being solidified into the stable channel. The password manager can auto-generate strong passwords and save them in Chrome's autofill memory. For tab junkies, the Omnibox will now search through your open tabs. And Google says that soon it will be able to search through Google Drive files. Google's announcement blog post looks forward to another 10 years of Chrome. And it calls out augmented reality and artificial intelligence as the next big features for browsers. Already, we're working on integrating augmented reality into Chrome to bring information you interact with across the web and put directly into your physical environment, Google says. Say you're shopping for a couch online and want to see how it would look in your living room. With the power of AR and Chrome, you'll be able to place a virtual rendition of a couch in your living room right from your smartphone. The company points out AI is already in use in the browser, powering the automatic Google Translate features and helping to detect phishing and malware sites. So what do you think of the new Chrome look? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299. Toll free, 1-800-790-0415.
I kind of like the trapezoidal tabs. It made them look different than all the other browsers.
Well, yeah, exactly. But part of the problem is it takes up too much real estate.
Yeah.
If you have the more square rectangular tabs, you've got a bucket load of tabs open, you can actually see the icons for longer.
Yep.
So,
tab.
What are you doing?
I'm opening lots of tabs.
Oh, there you go.
How many? No, I haven't reached a limit yet.
I don't even see any tabs. Where?
Every one of those lines is a tab.
Oh, yeah, okay. All righty. There you are. The limit is memory.
Yeah.
So it depends on how much memory you have as to whether or not you're doing. Oh my goodness, I converted a bunch of music.
Mm-hmm.
I had it all in M4A format, and I converted it to MP3 so I could play it in my car.
Yeah,
and it was about 200, 300 songs, and it pegged all four of my processors and all eight of my cores. It's multi. It's a 64-bit Linux machine, so it's multi-threaded.
Mm-hmm.
Blah 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 blah, and it did all of them in just a couple of minutes. But it just pegged. It's the first time I've seen, because I've got a little thing in my
meter,
a little meter thing, and it's the first time I've seen all four of them solid red right up to the top of the line,
and blowing the speaker.
And
out.
I thought, geez and crackers, that's some serious.
Vibrations.
There's stuff going on under there. Yeah. Well, it was converting, so it wasn't playing. It was
right,
but it was some.
But
some
if it was
compute power going on under there. But yeah, so you're limited really to the amount of memory you have, which means I can open fewer tabs. I've never really had more than 30 tabs open on my Chromebook, but I can open significantly more of those in my Linux box.
I find that I'm a tab guy. But everyone else in the office is not.
Uh-huh.
But I use tabs and windows. So I'll use tabs for related things.
Sure.
But something unrelated, I'll make a new window and a bunch of tabs in those. So I usually have a bunch of windows, each with a bunch of tabs.
Sure. Makes sense to me.
Yeah. But no one else who sits down at my computer can find anything.
One of the things that frustrated
me
most...
So just make a new window for yourself, then.
Right. One of the things that frustrated me most about Windows for the longest time is you only had one desktop. And like a tab guy, I'm a desktop guy.
Yeah.
I have... under Linux, I can switch back and forth among multiple desktops.
Mm-hmm.
So I've got one desktop with my mail on it. I've got one desktop with my browser on it. I've got one desktop with something else and something else and something else. And so I can switch back and forth, and now I'm basically in an, distraction-free-ish environment, right? When I'm looking at mail, I'm just looking at mail.
Mm-hmm.
There's nobody pinging me on Facebook. There's nobody – I haven't looked at Facebook in days, but that sort of stuff just doesn't happen.
Right.
And so it really has – it had an effect on me to the point where I just really didn't like Windows anymore. I didn't like having... Now you can do multiple desktops.
Mm-hmm.
But it used to be you could not, and it bothered me the longest time.
When Apple added that feature quite a few years ago now, there was a key combination initially, and then there was a gesture to let you switch to an alternate desktop.
Right.
We would get a lot of phone calls from people who accidentally got on another desktop and couldn't figure out how to get back. And where's my mail program?
Right.
And it's on the other desktop. What do you mean?
Right.
So most of the time we end up turning that feature off because people don't like it and can't get used to it.
Right. Well, and for those of you who have not used them, multiple desktops, the thing you see on your screen is called a desktop. And it used to be it was the only desktop you had on your machine. But now you can add multiple desktops and switch among them just like you switch among windows on your desktop. So like I said, I put my mail on one desktop and I put my browser on another desktop and I put something else on another desktop and my programming stuff on another desktop. And so each of those desks and, of course, my terminal because I'm in Linux on another desktop. And so those I can switch among those and not be distracted by other things while I'm working. And Steve is doing much the same thing there. And again, just like you did, I can slide things over from one window to another.
I keep forgetting that feature's there. So I'm going to put the broadcaster window over there so I don't accidentally close it when I'm working on the main window.
Perfect.
Yep.
And it sits there and it works just fine and it'll sit in the background and do its thing without... without issue, and you're good to go. It makes sense, and you can just switch over to look at it anytime you want.
Yep.
And so it's a very convenient and useful feature that most people don't even know they have, much less know how to run it. But it does take a little getting used to. But boy, I tell you what, when I first saw it under Linux, 20 years ago now, I thought this is it. This is the thing I need.
Yep.
I didn't know I was missing it.
Yeah.
So it's very cool, and it's it's a nice feature. And I do miss it on my Chromebook. I don't believe you have multiple desktops. At least I haven't found them on a Chromebook. And so it's very cool to have that feature on my. Of course, on a Chromebook, 99% of what you're doing is in a browser anyway. So you just have multiple tabs. So it's just like being on a browser page.
There's a plugin called Virtual Desktops.
Oh, nice. I don't know that I want to take up my fairly limited RAM.
Yeah.
Well, this machine only has 2 gig. My other machine is 4 gig. So that's more than enough. It's actually more than you basically need. The new version of I'll be interested in seeing what happens come October. I've been looking at buying a new Chromebook. There's a Dell out, the Dell Inspiron Chromebook. It's very nice. But I think I'm waiting until the next version of the Chrome OS, because it will not only run Android apps, but it will also run Linux apps. So it'll be interesting to see what the requirements are. I mean, you're mm-hmm. talking now about a real operating system.
I bet you. I'm thinking most likely it's going to be fine. Because,
yeah, I expect so too. 4 gig anyway. You won't need much more.
Because it's always been noted for running faster on less.
Right.
That's why we've always told other folks to take and use older machines that you think are no good and try Linux on them.
Right.
Because you'd be surprised how much faster they'll run, whereas, say, they wouldn't run that great with the newest version of Windows, but Linux can handle it fine.
Well, there's two reasons for that, of course. One is the fact that there's still 32-bit code in Windows.
Yep.
And not to get too deeply into the weeds, but when you are running any of the newer processors, they are either running in 64 bits or 32 bits. So if you have a combination of things, every time you switch from one to the other, you have to do what's called a state change. And that means all the entire state of the processor has to be saved out somewhere. The 64-bit state has
shifting
to be saved
it out to memory.
And then this 32-bit state has to be installed. Then you can do the 32-bit thing, and then you have to
shift
save
back
out the 32-bit state to install the 64-bit state so you can go back to the 64-bit thing. So when you're doing multitasking and you have some 32-bit stuff and some 64-bit stuff, your machine runs much slower. When you're running Linux, it is all 64-bit from the get-go. There is no 32-bit code in it unless you purposely install it,
mm-hmm.
which you can do. Yeah, I don't know why, but you could do. But if you do that, then it'll when you're running those things, it'll slow down again.
So is that still true in Windows 10?
Yes. There's very little left, but there's still, as I'm given to understand it, it's still there.
We're running into issues now. The Apple is starting to warn developers a future OS. We don't know if it's next year. A future OS is going to be 64-bit only.
Yep.
And so if you still have 32-bit apps, then you need to update them. So that came with the 10.13.6 update. Will now warn you when you open a app that this app may not be optimized for your Macintosh.
Right.
Which means
right.
it's 32-bit.
Well, and you didn't have that problem back when you were using the Motorola chips. But the Intel chips do state changes or phase changes.
So the 16 to 32 bit, actually we did have an issue there with memory.
Right.
That some of the early, since a lot of the early Macs were so underpowered, programmers did sneaky things with that 24-bit memory addressing with those extra 8 bits. So when we got 32-bit memory addressing, a lot of programs died because they were putting data in that 8
right.
bits.
Right.
So we had to. That was a 32-bit was quite an interesting change.
Yeah, and you're going to see it again when it's full 64.
Yep.
All right, we're gonna we've certainly got time to take Tom's question. Tom from Brighton, how are you? What do you need?
Hi, good afternoon. So I usually use a PC, but recently I was helping my brother out, and he uses an iMac. It's about, I guess, about 4 years old, maybe 3 years old. And when I was there, it was running exceedingly slow. Now, I'm not familiar with Macs. Generally, they're less susceptible to viruses and, you know, malware than PCs. But this one was behaving extremely slowly. And I'm wondering what the right approach would be to determine what's causing the slowness.
Well, there's an app called Activity Monitor, which is similar to Windows Process Viewer. And that's in the Utilities folder. That will tell you if there's an application using up too much of the processor. And it is possible that they've gotten malware installed. Drive-by downloads, malicious websites can install malware. So you can run Malwarebytes for Mac and see if any of that got installed. Oftentimes we see the malware is badly written. So in addition to being malicious, it really slows things down because it isn't written very well.
Isn't that the intent?
not really.
They'd rather run in the background unnoticed.
Yeah, it should be unnoticed so it can keep doing what it's doing.
I see.
And then how much free disk space you have can be an issue as well.
Yeah, I think you got plenty of disk space.
Yeah. So, yeah, check the activity monitor, see what's taking up too much CPU. It doesn't hurt to do a malware scan just in case to see if anything, especially with all the fake cleaning programs that are out now. A lot of people install what they think is a cleaning program, and it's really malware.
Okay. Now, the activity monitor, that's under what menu item would that be?
It's not. It's in the utilities folder.
Utilities folder. Okay. Thanks for the help.
Yep.
Yeah, absolutely. Good luck.
Thank you.
So I can see now, you know, my studio broadcaster is using 85% of my CPU because
right.
I'm streaming video.
And we do have to remind people that stop believing the myth that Macs can't get viruses. They're just as susceptible as any other operating system to the possibility of getting a virus. All right, we're going to take a slightly longer break. That music tells me you wasted an hour of your life with this nonsense, but you're going to have a chance to do it again. So we're going to take a slightly longer break. We'll be back on the other side of the hour for a whole lot more of the longest-running computer show in the known universe. We're going to bring back Dave Enright. We're going to bring back Steve Ray. I'll come back, too. I'm Nick Francesco. And we will bring you another hour of soundbites right here on the truly great and truly grateful to you that we continue to be member-supported Jazz 90.1. We will see you on the other side.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more soundbites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
WGMC Greece Rochester. A public service of the Greece Central School District. Jazz 90.1.
On Twitter at 901Jazz.
Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 5 minutes after the hour, we're hurtling headlong into the second hour of the longest-running computer show in the known universe. That's right. It's Soundbites, right here on the truly great and truly grateful to you that we continue to be member-supported, Jazz 90.1. Don't forget to give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 1-800-790-0415. So, we've already talked about Windows 7. Microsoft very confused recently. In February of this year, Microsoft drew some bold lines in the sand regarding its Office support plans by restricting how long it would support Office 365 Pro Plus on various versions of Windows and how long Office 2016 would be able to work with Office 365 services. But on September the 6th, Microsoft reversed course on these controversial moves. Earlier this year, Microsoft officials said they no longer support Office 365 Pro Plus on Windows 8.1, Windows Server 2016 and older, and any Windows 10 long-term servicing channel as of January 14th, 2020. Office 365 Pro Plus, which is available via subscription licensing only, comes with locally installed Outlook, Word, Excel, PowerPoint, OneNote, Access, Publisher, Skype for Business, OneDrive for Business, and the Office mobile apps.
And I think the subversion is 2016.
Yeah. My guess. Microsoft's argument was that these coming restrictions would enable both Office, would ensure that both Office and Windows receive regular coordinated updates to provide the most secure environment with the latest capabilities. On Thursday, however, based on customer feedback, which is their euphemistic term for pitchforks and torches, Microsoft officials said that Office 365 Pro Plus will continue to be supported on Windows 8.1 through January 2023, which is the end of support date for Windows 8.1 itself. Office 365 Pro Plus will continue to be supported on Windows Server 2016 until October 2025, which is still short of the 2027 end of support date for Windows Server, but 5 years longer than the cutoff date set in February. Microsoft also said earlier this year that as of October 2020, users would need to be running either Office 365 Pro Plus or Office 2019 clients, to continue to connect Office 365 back-end services. Office 2016, which remains supported by Microsoft until 2025, wouldn't work anymore as of October 2020, they said. But on Thursday again, based on customer feedback, Microsoft said they will continue to allow Office 2016 clients to work with Office 365 back-end services through October 2023. Office 2019, the perpetual non-subscription version of Office apps, is on track to ship this fall. Confused? You're not the only one. Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299, toll-free 1-800-790-0415.
All right, with that said,
yeah,
let me ask you a question.
Sure.
All right, now you have worked at RIT.
I have.
And you have had to do word processing, I'm assuming,
mm-hmm.
and spreadsheets,
yep.
and power, you know, presentations.
Yep.
Gee, what product did you use there?
Well, until Google Drive became available, I was using LibreOffice, and now I use Google Drive quite exclusively.
And did anybody know the difference?
No.
And
nobody
ever knew. What did that actually cost?
Zero. Cost me zero. It also meant that I could work on things anywhere on Earth.
Mm-hmm.
I could work on them in my car. I could work them at them on home. There was one time when I was driving to work to give a presentation, and I suddenly realized there was a thing I wanted to say, so I pulled over into a parking lot, got out my phone, and fixed my presentation on my phone so that when I got to work, it was ready to go there.
And I think they, due to this report, they're saying customer feedback. I think what it really is a lot of board members are in a panic, because they realize their sales are only going one way, and it's straight down right now because there is so much free stuff out there with Google.
Right.
That there's no justification, like we said just last week, that somebody has to go out and spend all this money for Office when you can go and get a free product that works just the same, so you have to tweak it a little bit. You've also written a few books with it, right?
Right.
Any problems getting it published or, you know, getting it set?
Nope. In fact, you need to translate it to EPUB format to upload it to Kindle.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you can do that right from the menu. File, save as EPUB.
Yeah.
Or download as EPUB. What? I'm done now. I'm done.
Yeah.
When I write the news, you guys are listed as collaborators.
Okay.
So I just go to File, Email Collaborators, hit the button, you guys get the notice that it's there, and in fact, you get a copy of it.
I don't know if I want to be a collaborator.
Yeah, well, better than an unindicted co-conspirator.
Yeah.
But that's what I mean. I don't think it's, you know, that they're interest of, you know, their users and everything else. It's panic mode.
Microsoft is very, very upset right now. They're frustrated.
It is based on feedback from users. Google's free. What are you doing?
Yeah. Right, exactly. they're very frustrated. They've been trying to move people to Windows 10, and people aren't doing it as fast as they'd like. They're trying to get people to stop using old versions of Office that they're not paying for, and people won't, you know, they paid for it once, and now they just keep using it as if they now owned it or something.
I still see a lot of people using Office 2000,
yep.
because that was the last version that didn't check your serial number over the internet.
Right.
So they can make as many legal copies as they want.
Right. Whereas, all you have to do is, if you need something that's on your machine, download LibreOffice. It's not only free, it's also legal.
Yeah.
And it does all the new stuff that Office 2000 does not. And, oh, by the way, it both reads and writes, and you can make it the default Microsoft formats.
And if it makes you feel better, you can rename the file Microsoft Office.
If you want to, you can do that.
And it doesn't have a limit as to how many machines it can be on consecutively.
Right.
So if you have a tablet, a desktop unit, a couple laptops, all could have their own, even your phone.
Yep. Yep.
Hello.
And the same, and with Google, or Google One now, I think it's called. Google One? I think.
Yeah.
Who knows?
At any rate, the point is with
the product formerly known as Drive.
right now,
AKA.
Which was formerly known as Docs.
Right now, it's just the symbol. Is not only free, but runs on everything. Like I said, I get all the power on my phone that I get on my tablet, that I get on my desktop, that I get on my laptop. It runs everywhere because all it needs is a browser. I can run it on my Raspberry Pi just as fast and just as well and with all the same features.
Mm-hmm.
I do a lot of voice stuff now. I can do voice dictation into Google Docs. And I've been doing that for the longest time. And again, I can do that from my phone. I can do that from my tablet. I can do that from anywhere just as fast and just as well as I can do it from my desktop because the power is in the cloud, right? The power is in Google's computers, not mine. And so, but, you know, it's scary. It's scary to say I've got something that I have to learn. You know, I already know how to use Word. I already know how to use Excel. I already know how to use PowerPoint. And it's hard to turn around and say, now you have to learn something new. Although the differences are so minimal.
Yeah.
90% of the time. The big differences really are in...
the fonts.
The fonts. And the big difference is going from Excel to Google, it's not called Calc. What the heck's it called?
But as far as the fonts, folks, don't let us scare you on that. It's just that certain fonts aren't there or they're labeled differently.
Right.
Your basic fonts are going to look the same.
Right. People tend to use the fonts that came with Windows.
Yeah.
Some of them are proprietary. So you won't necessarily, and also some of them are available for, say, Linux, but you have to download them.
Mm-hmm.
Now, on the other hand, because I'm using Google, Google has something called Google Fonts, web fonts, fonts.google.com. There's 800-plus fonts up there. I can use any one of those I want. And trust me when I tell you there's some very, very fine, fine fonts up there. So it is easy to get complacent about what you're using, but the reality is if you look around, you may find something that suits you just as well, if not better, and is cheaper or free.
Yeah, I was going to say free along with everything else that Google offers. Like we've told you folks, you know, even your photos, they can all be stored up on the cloud free of charge.
Right.
And all your documents and everything else, you can convert, say, all your Word documents, switch those over to Google Docs. Again, you're getting all this storage for free.
That's right.
And it's like Nick was saying, you could be anywhere. And if you want to access something, it's right there. You could get it on your phone.
Yep. And if you want to share it with somebody, they can view it in the viewer. You can actually collaborate on editing. If they have a Google email address, you can share it with them to the point where they could write it as well.
Mm-hmm.
So you can I've done that too. I've collaborated with people on things where both of us are writing simultaneously and there's a chat window open on the side and it's very cool. And like I said, you can do voice dictation and you can add obviously all the pictures and grids, tables that you want and insert a spreadsheet into your document and all of that stuff. So, and presentations work great. It's just a matter of learning that new thing.
Yep.
So, and like you said, I can download a file as a Word document, an open document format, which is LibreOffice, rich text, RTF, which is what Notepad uses, a PDF, plain text, a web page, or an EPUB.
And Google, you know, I mean, was, yeah, what was it before? I'm trying to think the old name. But they were ahead of Office in saving things as a PDF.
Right.
They were way ahead of them as far as, you know, you could do up a document and say you want to pass it out to folks and not have them change it. The best way you could do it was save it as a PDF. Microsoft didn't allow that.
Right.
Now you can, that was automatically built right into the system, and you could way ahead of Microsoft and saving it as a PDF.
Right.
So, I mean, if anything, they can spin it any way they want, but basically they're just worried that they're going to lose ground. They've lost ground as far as the operating system because of all the crashes and lockups and everything else, literally bricked a number of machines. And, you know, you can go to a Chromebook and it'll do everything, and especially now folks are so familiar with their phones and running apps there that now your Chromebook can do the same thing.
Right.
Okay, what's the downside of that? Nothing. So Microsoft is slowly being pushed out the door because Chrome can do it all.
Chrome can do it all. And equally importantly, there's the reality that Microsoft is now changing this, but for decades, people were angry, years at least, people were angry that in the middle of something, Windows would reboot because it had an update.
Yeah.
You know, in terms of my Chromebook, if I haven't bothered to update it myself, eventually you get a little arrow here that says reboot. You don't even have to. I work away. I'm fine. I shut it down. The next time I open it up, I got the new operating system.
Yeah, it does it overnight.
Done.
Yeah.
Does it all by itself when you shut it down and restart it again. So I don't even have to do that. And I never have, nothing stops me. I've had faculty call me and say, what am I going to do? I just started class, and Microsoft said it's a two-hour update. Well,
teach
the way you used to. All right, we're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes, Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, you, 19 minutes after the hour. Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free, 1-800-790-0415. Back with a whole lot more sound bites on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Computer talk you can understand. More sound bites is next on member supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 24 minutes after the hour, we are sound bites. During the break, I was looking at the fonts that I have actually installed here, and I've only got about 35 or so fonts. But there's an add-on called Extensis Fonts, which lets you get all of the Google fonts. And if you want to see what the Google fonts are, you just go to fonts.google.com, and it shows you all 888 of them so far, and there's more all the time. I don't know where they're getting this text. I love the text. I want to read the story this text came from. But there's an amazing number of fonts. They have serif. You can categorize them. Serif, sans serif, display, handwriting, monospace, how thick they are, the number of styles they have, pretty much everything that you want. And there's a number of really very beautiful ones. And they'll also recommend a companion font. So if you're using them, they're originally designed specifically for web, right? So if you want, you can find a display font to do your headings in, and then they'll recommend a good companion text font.
Oh, okay.
For your text.
Well, like I say, there's so many fonts out there, folks, that are the same but different names.
Right.
Like one is Century School Book.
Right.
And then there's the New Century School Book.
Right. And there's Bookman.
Yeah. They're all the same style.
Most of those were designed by professional typographers for the traditional hot metal type.
Right.
And then it got moved into digital type.
Mm-hmm.
And then we see, what do they call them? Not
font.
Counterfeit's not the right word. But a smaller designer will make an equivalent to Bookman,
right?
Without calling it Bookman, so they have to pay royalties.
If there are any fontographers or fontologists listening, you cringed when we said they're identical. They're not. They're similar. Their kerning is going to be a little different. And
to the, to the average
person,
right.
To the average person,
yeah, right. To the average individual, there's no difference.
Yeah.
Right? I can, you know, a serif font is a serif font is a serif font. And a, yeah. Sans serif font is, you know, so I get it. I get it. I do. I'm not a big fan of sans serif fonts. You get more hints with a serif font so you can read them faster.
Yeah, typically sans serif would be a headline and a serif would be a the body.
Right, right. The body, yeah. But there, you know, there are 888 Google fonts. I can put all of them in my document if I really wanted to be an idiot. But I can put any of them in my document. And,
but
and
again, the bottom line, though, folks, is what we're talking about is this is all free.
Yeah.
Unlike, you know, the Office that you, you know, you're paying yearly fees to update, which even these updates, they don't do that much more from one year to the other to the next.
Well, and of course, that's as we were talking about earlier, Microsoft is very frustrated right now that people are hanging on to ancient versions of Office because they want to move everybody and ancient versions of Windows because they want to move everybody to a subscription base.
Mm-hmm.
They have told their investors that and you don't lie to investors. So we know that that's their plan. So the idea is if you're going to use Windows, you pay for the privilege every single year. And if you're going to use Office, you pay for the privilege every single year. And it may be that it's cheap enough that you don't think about it because so it's not going to hurt. But it also means that they can now say we've got, you know, 200 million people each paying $10 a month. So that's what I say, 200 million people, mm-hmm. that's $2 billion a month.
But they're like
for their investors.
If we have seen even here in Rochester and all across the country, they're losing their foothold as far as the school systems.
Exactly.
Because the schools find it a lot cheaper to hand these kids Chromebooks.
Right.
Or Chrome tablets, essentially. Right. And they're, you know, just about non-destructive. Right. You know, they can drop them in that, which kids, you know, you've got to have something that's durable. And new Chromebooks and these Gator containers, you know, they're great. They don't have to worry about maintaining an operating system because, oh, Chromebook just works.
Right.
It can't get viruses, can't get spyware, can't get malware. School system has said, our job's done here. You know, we can put on the apps they want, lock it down, and protect them. Kids can't go adding other stuff and all that other stuff. You know, crud that might get in there, like right. games and that might give it viruses. Nope, can't happen on a Chromebook.
And if a kid does destroy a Chromebook, you just give them a new one. They log in with the same username and password, and bang, all their stuff is there. The other thing, and that's the big thing. If you can, and schools look at this and say, wait, that Chromebook cost me $200. And the cheapest Windows machine I can get is $400. And the cheapest Mac I can get is $600. Which way am I going to go?
Plus, the other thing is yearly, these tablets will get all their updates for free.
Right.
Whereas Windows, like we said, it's going to a base program, fee base. They're going to have to pay yearly fees.
And you can't get a virus, so there's no issues with kids coming in and whatever.
And the maintenance for your administrators, your IT folks, you've just taken a huge load off their table.
Right.
Because they can sit there and just, oh, it's infected or it got messed up. Oh, okay. They just wipe it and reload it.
And because you can manage the Chromebooks with the Chromebook Manager, software, I can say, okay, you're using these applications and you're going to store them in your Google Drive. And oh, by the way, I have access to those folders so that I can see your work and I can share your work. And now I can say, you know what? You two guys are working on a project together. So I can say, here's a shared drive for you. And you can share documents and work on them simultaneously and do everything like that. So, yes. And as we've said before, Apple for decades, followed the Jesuit, method of the Jesuits have a saying, give me your child before he's seven and he's mine for life.
Mm-hmm.
And Apple believed in that, and that's why Apple's grammar school and high school programs were so good. Mm-hmm. But they've gotten away from that somehow.
Yeah.
And again, Chrome, Google, took that over.
Cheap is winning out.
Cheap is winning out.
Cheap and good enough.
Cheap and good enough. Schools just need students to be able to do writing and spreadsheets and some graphics and surf the web. Well, duh. If I can do that for $200 or $900, which one am I going to go with?
Plus, they've provided a spot, a place where the kids can do their homework, say, and upload it. It won't get lost.
Yep.
You know, and teachers can submit, you know, you know, tests and everything else. Have the kids do it. Boom. Up to the web it goes.
Parents on the web. It never leaves the web. So.
And the parents can also check on kids' progresses and everything else.
Yep.
I mean, it's just a big win-win for Google.
Right.
And that's why I say Microsoft is running scared.
Right. And I look at my students this semester, and I look around the room, and half of them have Chromebooks. Mm-hmm. So I said, how many of you use Chromebooks in high school?
Yep.
All the hands went up.
Yeah.
And so it's that, give me your child before he's seven. They used them. They know how useful they are. Now, most of my students are computer science in some aspect or other, IT or computer science. So they're all big gamers, right? So they've got a desktop at home that they spent $3,000 for, and it's got super whiz-bang this and that.
The graphics.
Terabytes of everything. So, and that's great, but coming to class, they don't need to take all that with them.
Yeah.
So they bring a $200 Chromebook, which does everything they need to do. Even if they lose it, they've still got all that stuff at home. It's just, it's a very clever way to do all of that stuff. And people are beginning to understand that 99% of people don't need any more than a Chromebook. And the good stuff that you get from it, the lack of viruses, the security, the ease of update, blah, 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 is just a bonus. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Gerd from Victor, New York. Hiya, Gerd, what's up?
Well, not much. I'm kind of curious. How do I change my password to get into my Chromebook?
How do you change the password?
Yes.
Does your password not work anymore?
No, it works. It works. I had it at Best Buy, and they did some fooling around with it, and one of the suggestions was change your password.
Accounts.google.com.
Right. You don't have to do it at the Chromebook. You do it at Google. You can do it through the Chromebook, of course. But you just go to accounts.google.com. And sign in.
Under sign in and security, there's a change password.
Right. So once you sign in, you sign in with your old password.
Yeah.
Right. And once you do that, you get a whole bunch of choices. Somehow I ended up at Google Play with Boggle.
It's amazing what happens when you make a typo.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Yep. Okay.
And then there's a sign-in and security, and scroll down a little bit.
There we go.
Passwords and sign-in method, and then you can change your password, and then enable or disable two-factor authentication.
Right.
Good.
So and you can do all kinds of stuff there. You can do the security, the privacy checkup. You can adjust all your account preferences.
When did they do the free space? For doing the privacy checkup.
They did it every 2 years, but it is part of the privacy checkup, but I don't think they do it anymore now.
So I need more space. No.
Yeah, I know. I've got 19 gig out of my 15 gig.
Yep.
It's under sign in and security just go there. And one of the things that you can do is change your password. Scroll down a little bit, and there it is. You change your password, and you're on your way. You can also do two-step verification.
Okay.
Which means that once you sign in from a new machine, you get a code on your phone that you have to type in.
Okay.
So that can prevent a bad guy from breaking into your account because he doesn't have your phone, too.
Right.
Very good.
Okie doke.
You guys are precious.
Thank you so much.
Happy birthday to everybody.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Have fun.
And I am a member.
That's what I like to hear.
Okay.
Thanks.
One of the things that tells you on that page is when you last changed your password, and I changed my password June of 2011.
Yeah.
That might be time to change it again. Yeah.
Might be time.
Could be.
Might be time. I beat you by quite a few years, but still, I'm also looking at mine and thinking, maybe. Maybe it's time. It's not a bad idea to change your password once in a while. You need it less with two-factor authentication, but still,
yeah,
it's not a bad idea. I have two-factor authentication set up, so the first time I log in from a new device, it asks me, I've got it set up. I've got this set up so that it logs me in automatically if my phone is unlocked.
Yep.
So I don't have to get that every time, but.
Yeah, the big danger is if there's a breach at some store, the password you used at that store is now potentially public.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And if you use that password anywhere else, they have passwords for that account, too. So that's why you never want to reuse passwords on different sites.
Right.
But even if you did use a different password, you might want to change your password anyway.
Yeah,
right.
So a lot of times people will use a pattern. So 123 Amazon, 123 eBay.
Right.
Well, if I'm a bad guy and I see your password is 123 eBay.
At eBay.
I'm going to go to PayPal and try 123 PayPal.
Right.
And
there you go.
Might get in. Yeah.
Right. It's very important to make sure that your passwords are secure because they are the only thing preventing the bad guys from getting at your stuff. So be very careful of them. Be very willing
Wary.
To change them regularly. and do so. It's not a bad idea. And we were talking about the security checkup. Google has something on that same page called security checkup. And it used to be if you had, if you took the security checkup, they gave you an extra 2 gig of storage. So I did it twice and ended up with 19 gig instead of just 15 gig. But I don't believe they do that anymore. And it does everything. It talks about issues with your devices, and it talks about third-party access and recent security events and two-step verification and all of that stuff. And it's not a bad idea to go through that once in a while. Particularly if you are using Google stuff, you're going to want to have the peace of mind that comes with knowing that it's secure. All right, we're going to take another break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It's 39 minutes after the hour. It's Soundbites. It's member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Before you call into our show, please make note of the following rules. 1, turn your radio down. 2, turn your radio down lower. 3, remember, nobody has invented a good-sounding speakerphone yet. Don't use them. 4, make sure you have a point. It makes for a more interesting show. 5, calling does not guarantee you'll get on the air. No whining. 6, if you do get on the air, please do not tell the host what you just told the screener. We don't care. And 7, is that radio turned down yet? We hope this will make for a more enjoyable program, and we thank you for your time.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Computer problems? Get answers from the experts. Soundbites, noon to 2 Saturdays, only on Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 44 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. And speaking of the thing we were talking about last segment, do you use the same passwords for all of your online services? Are you worried somebody can hack any one of them and take them all? Google on Tuesday released an improved built-in password manager that automatically generates a random password when you sign on to a new website. It's one of the new features Google unveiled as part of a redesign of its Chrome browser. Having the same password for everything could be dangerous. If a hacker infiltrates any one of your accounts, all of your accounts could be at risk, which is what we just talked about. Google saves the auto-generated passwords for your Google account. So with your Google account, rather, so they should survive intact, even if you drop your phone into the ocean or your laptop dies. And if you're interested in moving from Chrome to a cross-browser password manager like 1Pass, LastPass, or Bitwarden, you can export your passwords through Chrome's Settings Password section. So do you reuse passwords? Why? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free, 1-800-790-0415.
Because it's easy.
Well, it's easy, and I can't think of new passwords. Sure you could. Sure you could easily think of new passwords. You just don't.
And most of the browsers recommend passwords now, too.
Right,
They'll auto-generate a secure password that you have no hope of remembering.
But you don't have to remember it. You just have to use your browser. And if you're using Chrome and you save it as part of your Chrome login, part of your Chrome, your Google password, or your Google identity, then no matter what device you're on, Google will remember those passwords. So you don't even have, it takes away all of the issue for you. So it's very cool and it's very easy to use, and more people should be using it. If whatever browser you're using, there's a password manager built in. Google's is just a little, has a couple of extra features that I'm sure will appear in other, browsers soon, but right now it's just in Google. So, take 5 minutes on passwords. We've talked about this many, many times before. When you have a password, when you're creating a password, I just broke your thing. I'm sorry. I beg your pardon.
It didn't come off the build plate because of the printer. I've got to get it leveled. But
yeah, right.
But you broke the other wheel off. I know the wheel that was on the build plate.
Yeah, no, broken another one. Right. Sorry.
I got to print it bigger anyway.
Yeah. It's a tiny bit small. Steve has a 3D printer, and we're just...
If you want it to only take an hour, it's got to be small.
Yeah, right. What was I talking about? Oh, passwords. Make them unique. There are enough password managers out there nowadays, and now Google does it themselves. It's not that difficult to create a password. It's not that difficult to make a very long and involved password. Remember, length is more important than complexity. Computers don't understand English anyway, so complexity doesn't matter to them. Hello and 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 and kloop are all the same thing to a computer. They don't understand the language. Mm-hmm. So what you want is length, which is more important than complexity. So having a password that's 20 or 24 or 26 characters long means that you've now got a very secure password. Of course, the problem is remembering a 20 or 24 or 26 character password. But with this new Chrome feature, you don't have to. Chrome remembers it for you, and so you don't have to remember it. But you now have a secure, and if you're smart, unique password for each site, which is what we've been saying for years.
Well, I've been doing that with Chrome. A lot of the stuff that I log into, because I use different passwords, I've been doing it in Chrome and having Chrome remember it.
Yep.
Because it doesn't matter what if the computer crashes, I just log back into my Google account, and all the passwords that I used for the Chrome browser are there.
They're on your Chromebook. They're on your desktop. They're on your laptop.
And I don't have to remember. And mm-hmm. I could create, because I create different ones for everything, whether it's banking or going to this site or that site. They all have to be so different. So security and everything. It's just a lot easier to let them turn it over than back in the days when I used, a Firefox and that to write them down and everything else. I don't have to manage it anymore.
And if you want to get scared, if we haven't scared you enough already.
Yeah, right.
There's a website called Have I Been Pwned, PWNED, we've talked about before. You type in your email address and it will tell you where your email account that your email address has been lost. in what breaches they were. So, you know, my one of my older addresses. Now, Coupon Mom. I've never gone to Coupon Mom. But somehow my email address was used by them and got leaked in a breach. And so it's very hard to change your email address, almost worse than moving your postal address.
Right.
But the big thing is change your password that you used with that address at that site, because it may be something else.
I use two-factor authentication, and with one of my older accounts that I really don't use anymore, I got a message on my phone that said the same thing that you normally do, code is, 12345. And I thought, my code to what? Doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. They can't get into my account because they don't have that code, which is a one-time code that's only good for 5 minutes. So as long as I don't run around saying, hey, who needs code 12345, 5 minutes later, we're all good.
Now, sometimes I think that's just somebody who mistyped their own address.
Sometimes.
Or, I've got StephenRay@Mac.com. And we've had customers that, well, I want to make a Gmail address, so I'm going to make StephenRay@gmail.com. Someone else may already have that.
Right.
And so if you just start assuming your address is, StephenRay@gmail.com, other people are going to get your mail. So you can often tell how long someone's been on a service by how complex their email address is.
Right.
Because those addresses have already been taken.
Right. Mm-hmm. Well, the interesting thing for me is because my name is unusual, Nick, not a lot of Nicks out there, sometimes I get mail addressed to somebody else.
Yep.
So if you put, because so many email programs now auto fill for you.
Yep.
So if I type in John, I get a list of choices.
Mm-hmm.
And it's rarely the first one, so people look and pick John Smith.
Yeah.
But when it's Nick, they think I only know one Nick.
Mm-hmm.
Well, as it turns out, you know at least two. Because I just got mail for somebody else.
Yep. Well, there's the actor Stephen Ray, Scottish actor.
Right.
And I get mail intended for him every now and then, thanking me for, doing some charity event at their church or whatnot. Sometimes I want to send back a vulgar, coarse, terrible message just to see if it makes the news. We had this nice actor come to our event, and he sent us this horrible.
Yeah. But, keep stifling those urges, will you?
Yep. So your email address has been breached a few times.
Yeah.
Including a botnet, 43 million people in the tick spam botnet.
Yeah. And mostly comes when people send out some sort of group thing and put all the addresses in the to line. Never put the addresses in the to line or the CC line. Put them in the BCC line so that they're not visible to everybody walking by.
Yep. I also get a kick out of the spammers that get hacked by other spammers. So there's no honor among thieves.
That's that's poetic justice.
We'll break into your database so we don't have to build our own.
Right. Right. But yeah, be very careful what your passwords are. Easily guessed passwords. Passwords with patterns, like Steve said, 123 eBay, 123.
And most services will give you a strength indication. So a lot of people like to use words because it's easy to remember, and then numbers. But dictionary attacks, where the bad guys feed a dictionary in, that will work. So if you want to do that, put the numbers in the middle of the word.
Right.
So that makes it harder.
Well, Social Security now set new limits, are new requirements for their passwords that you have to have uppercase, lowercase, numbers, and
symbols
in it.
Yep.
For it to work. Or
as Steve said, the problem is people will say hello 123 exclamation point.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's not as good as HE12!3 LLO.
Right.
Right. So be careful of how you set, and of course you have a limit too, and I realize
again, it becomes to laziness.
Right. Well, people think they're not smart enough to remember passwords. And they're wrong. But they think that about themselves, which is silly.
Although the guy that originally came up with the password requirements, including changing it every 90 days, recently apologized.
Yeah.
When the government NIST probably was trying to come up with password policies, no one had any. So this guy just started going around to different departments and what's your password policy? What's your password? Oh, that sounds good. Let's make it that.
Yeah.
So at the time, the danger of not changing your password was someone who left the company had your password. So you should change it all the time.
Right.
So change your password every 90 days. Someone could have gotten it 89 days ago. So you should change your password every minute.
Right.
No.
Right. But if you make it really, really, really long and yep. two-factor authentication, now you're better off.
Yep.
Not that two-factor authentication is any sort of panacea, but still. All right. That music tells me that we're done. We're done for another week. I want to thank both of the people who called in. I want to thank all those of you who are listening. Don't go away. George is coming in to play the best German music you'll hear all week. Michael's here to keep him on the straight and narrow. We'll be back next week with more of Dave Enright, too much more of Steve Ray, more of me, Nick Francesco, and, of course, all of you. It is 55 minutes after the hour, and you've been listening to the longest-running computer show in the known universe. That's Soundbites, right here on the truly great and truly grateful to you that we are member-supported Jazz 90.1. We will see you in 166 hours.